From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There isn't any disputing the fact that Eleanor Roosevelt had an intimate physical relationship with another woman while she was First Lady. Her letters to this woman, an AP reporter named Lorena Hickok, make it clear. There were more than 3,000 letters between the two, and they reveal a deep passion. But Susan Quinn says she still encounters people who are unwilling to believe it. She says it's because people have this fixed idea of Eleanor Roosevelt with her flowered hats and sensible shoes. Quinn has written a book about the relationship using what she found in the letters, which she says are less remarkable for their shock value than for the story they tell of two women who just loved each other. Quinn will join us today to talk about that story after the news.
Purchase the books that you hear featured on Radio West by clicking the IndieBound, Amazon, or Audible links included with each show at RadioWest.org. A portion of proceeds from these affiliate partners supports Radio West. While you're there, you can check out all the show archives. Thanks for listening.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So it's true there is some shock value in Eleanor Roosevelt's letters to Lorena Hickok. People called her Hick, was an AP reporter who became Eleanor Roosevelt's lover in the early days of the Franklin Roosevelt administration. She had her own room in the White House for a while. And they expressed their love, their passionate physical love, in more than 3,000 letters. But Susan Quinn says in her new book about this relationship, the letters are far more important and even more interesting than just the affair they reveal. The letters, she says, tell the story of their time. Remember, the country was deep in depression, you had rampant poverty, and of course, war was on the horizon. Quinn says the letters are a kind of reportage of life in the Roosevelt White House. Today in the program, Susan Quinn is joining us to talk about her book, Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. Quinn is a biographer, a former journalist. Her work has appeared in The New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, among other publications. She's joining us today from a studio in Boston. And Susan Quinn, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I want to begin with what I kind of detected as a larger theme in here. It's about a love relationship, and we'll certainly dig into that. But it also seems like there's another theme in this book, that it's about two women and the way they kind of managed to forge, is kind of how you put it, forge these independent lives for each other, I guess, despite mm-hmm. the times. Is there that in here as well?
Very much. And they came together at a very difficult time in Eleanor Roosevelt's life. She was about to become First Lady. Yeah. And surprisingly, she dreaded it very much. She had, after 1918, when she discovered FDR's love letters to her former secretary, mm-hmm. she began a whole process of developing an independent life for herself. Teaching, writing, speaking. She was very involved in New York politics. And suddenly, she was going to have to be First Lady and perform all those ceremonial duties, go back to Washington, which was the scene of the betrayal, which she always saw as a betrayal, Roosevelt's affair with Lucy Mercer. So for all of those reasons, she was really not looking forward to this. And Lorena Hickok came along. She was this AP reporter who really in the top of her field, one of the few women, and she who refused to write on the women's page. She was a very serious reporter, a very ambitious reporter, and she got assigned to Eleanor Roosevelt mm-hmm. and soon discovered what a fascinating person she was.
Yeah. One of the things that we'll talk about are these letters between the two, Lorena and Eleanor, more than 3,000 of them, and they end up eventually in Lorena's hands. And it's an interesting sort of decision that seems like she has to make, because some of Eleanor's friends said to Lorena, look, you should get rid of those. You should burn them or certainly destroy them. But she didn't. She cleaned some of them up. She removed some of the maybe more explicit stuff. But she didn't destroy them. Why do you think she didn't?
Well, I think that originally the reason she had both sides of the correspondence were because Eleanor expected her Hick, that is, Lorena Hickok, who was a very good writer, to write her biography. Mm-hmm. So she gave her both sides of the correspondence. Hick never really had the critical distance to write a whole biography. But I think she believed that these letters belonged to history. And thank goodness she did, because they're wonderful letters. They do have very explicit expressions of their affection, especially in the early years. But they also are a lot about what was happening, about Lorena's experiences going out into the country and covering the situation on the ground for the Roosevelt administration, and Eleanor back in Washington trying to be the first lady as expected and also engaging in her own battles. Mm-hmm. So they're full of rich stories about the time. And I think Hick sensed the importance of the letters and therefore gave them to the FDR library with the stipulation that they couldn't be opened right away. We all had to wait until 10 years after Lorena Hickok died for the letters to become available.
Well, and then as soon as that time passes, they're opened. And one of the people who first encounters them is a journalist named Doris Faber. Happened upon them is how you put it in the book. And you, as you explain in the book, Faber was pretty shocked. In fact, she thought that the library should lock the letters up again. Would you talk about this? Because I thought this is really interesting, because this, again, seemed like a really crucial moment as to what's going to happen to the story.
Right. Well, this is 1977, so we all have to remember what attitudes were towards homosexuality in 1977.
Yeah.
And also what attitudes were towards Eleanor Roosevelt. She was this revered, beloved figure by that time. Hadn't always been, but by that time she'd become kind of a saint and certainly an icon. And then here was this trove of letters which suggested pretty strongly, as Faber said, can any reasonable person deny that these are love letters?
Right.
Her reaction was that they should be locked up again. She tried to get the librarians, in fact, to do that. Her other reaction was that Lorena Hickok only gave the letters to the FDR library because she wanted some kind of posthumous fame,
right,
which, of course, is a really kind of cruel thing to say about Lorena Hickok. Not true. I think she loved Eleanor always. And so these letters for her, you know, were wonderful and important. Anyway, so she wrote a book. Yeah. Doris Faber did back then in the 70s. And the book is not bad, but it really downplays and tries to kind of mute and muffle the whole idea of the love affair.
Yeah.
And in the process, it makes Lorena Hickok less than she was, I feel. She really gets short shrift. So there was time to revisit the whole thing.
When did you first start reading the letters? I mean, you started going through. You mentioned this was about 6 years ago. You started going through these letters.
So. Yeah. I actually thought I was going to write about Harry Hopkins. I thought the book started as about Harry Hopkins, and then I happened on Lorena Hickok. And Harry Hopkins was FDR's number two, very important figure in the New Deal. But as soon as I found these letters, Lorena Hickok worked for Harry Hopkins. As soon as I found the letters, it became very clear to me that this was the story I wanted to tell. It was about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
The moment I kind of thought of it, it seemed like the story to write.
You write about when word first got out about Eleanor and Lorena's relationship that, people were kind of outraged, didn't really want to hear about it, which I get for the 70s, But you say even today there are people who don't want to, believe this about the sainted Eleanor Roosevelt?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems undignified in some way. And Eleanor, we always see her so dignified. I think it's great, that she had this. She was, of course, came from great wealth and privilege. but she lived a pretty loveless life.
Yeah.
And there were I don't think her marriage was ever really passionate. I think it was always a thing of duty. And, you know, she married FDR because it was the thing to do. She was 20. He was 22. Neither of them knew much. And they were Roosevelts and they were privileged and it all fit together and it was what was expected. And it got her out of the debutante world, which she hated very much, you know. So so there was the marriage and the children and, you know, and then kind of it all went south in 1918.
Yeah.
And then after that, there were love relationships with men. You know, she had sort of these flirtations with men, like FDR's bodyguard was one who was very empowering and taught her how to dive and how to shoot and how to ride, things she hadn't been taught as a girl, you know. And then there were others. There was a activist left, activist Joe Lash, and a doctor at the end of her life. And all of them, she was kind of number three in all of these relationships. They were all married or attached to someone else, and she was kind of loving but from the side. So Hick was the only one who was her one and only for a brief time. And Hick, of course, would love to have made that a life commitment.
Yeah. We'll get back to that because I think that's a big question that you get to.
Yeah.
But how do you think you understand Eleanor Roosevelt's sexuality, like in today's terms? I mean, we've come to know sexuality as something pretty fluid. Is that how you see Eleanor? Was she, you know, bisexual? Was she conventionally lesbian? Who did what many lesbians of the time did, I imagine, you know, repress it and then live the life that they were expected to live? Where do you see Eleanor Roosevelt if you have a kind of a theory about her sexuality?
You know, no one used the word lesbian or talked about these women who love women, but she was surrounded by them. You know, when she went to school in England, her beloved teacher, the headmistress of the school, Mademoiselle Souestre, was in a lifetime commitment with another woman. She was a lesbian, that was clear, and there were a lot of homoerotic kind of atmosphere at the school. And then the very early organizers of the women's movement, the women who were involved in suffrage and then went on to be early women in the Democratic Party, many of them were in life relationships, had life partners. And Eleanor was friends with those women and they were her best friends. So it was all around her in a way that might have made it feel kind of a little bit more normal and natural. And but certainly it wasn't something you advertised or told anyone about. And it was even a crime as well as being deeply shameful among people. So what went on between her and Eleanor? There was a lot of longing, a lot of expression of love and concern. I think when they were together, they certainly were physical with each other, loving, hugging, kissing, you know, perhaps orgasmic sex. We don't know that. There's no way of knowing, you know.
Sure.
Hick was certainly a lesbian, and she had been in a long relationship before Eleanor and then was in at least one afterward. So she was experienced and might have led Eleanor in that direction. It's hard to know.
Yeah.
Certainly, it was love between them, a deep love, not just a friendship. And it was one of the most important of both Hick's life and Eleanor's life.
It's interesting as the story kind of progresses that you tell in the book, and as Eleanor develops this engaged and independent life that she starts having after she discovers this affair of FDR in 1918— But I did start to wonder if Lorena was just maybe a phase in some ways in Eleanor Roosevelt's life, that her sexuality was complex, but that the relationship was just something that came along when she needed real care and real affection. But it wasn't something really permanent that she had in mind. She had, you know, would find lovers later in men, as you said. And so even though it was a meaningful relationship, in some ways it seemed like kind of a phase for a while for Eleanor. Is that unfair?
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's true. I think Eleanor Roosevelt was capable of caring and genuine concern for many, many people. Mm-hmm. And many people felt that. They'd say that about Eleanor. If they met her, you know, she when you were with her, you felt you were the only person in the room, the only person in the world. Mm-hmm. And she had a way of gazing at you and caring about you and listening that was wonderful. But I think because of her own childhood, her mother pretty much rejected her. Her father died of alcoholism when she was 10, and she was raised by a very cold Victorian grandmother. So there was not a lot of affection, certainly not physical affection in her life. So having a lasting commitment to someone is not something she probably was capable of. And Lorena came along at a good moment. Lorena Hick would have loved to keep it going, but I think Eleanor did move on. She moved on, and the other men that she connected with. As I mentioned before, I think Eleanor tended to be in triangular relationships. Yeah. Even her marriage, in some ways, was a triangle because of her mother-in-law, who was all powerful. And then these other men always were attached to someone else, and she was kind of involved in their marriages and their affection for the other woman. But she was also said that she was in love with him. So it was love was complicated for Eleanor because I think of her childhood.
Yeah. That sort of triangle nature of the relationships is odd. And as you say, when we'll get back to this, there's this David Gurevich character who. Mm-hmm. They have a relationship. She's sort of hoping that he will ask her to get married, and in the end, he marries someone else. But they move into the same apartment together.
Yes, yes.
So this weird sort of triangle, and I'm trying to think what that says about Eleanor if she was in some ways asexual. I don't know. What do you make of that?
I don't think she was. Her grandchildren and her children have all said this, that she was not very physical, certainly with her family. I think she sort of believed she shouldn't be in some way, that it wasn't proper or right. So physical relationships for her were never easy. They might have been easier with a woman, I don't know, with Hick than they were with the men. But certainly if each of these men, and particularly with David Gurevich, this doctor, Russian-Swiss-Jewish doctor whom she became enamored of sort of late in life, I think she was wanting something more. But she was a lot older, and he wound up marrying a woman more his age. And she managed her emotions somehow and moved in with them and lived in the same – bought an apartment house together and lived together right till the end of her life.
But before we head to a break, I want to ask you about something I had mentioned in the introduction, and this is another sort of important theme in this story, because you write that Hick and Eleanor's intimacy would have to fit in around Eleanor's marriage, of course. She was married to the president of the United States. And so there was this kind of momentous world events that, I mean, you can find in the letters this lovely relationship and these beautiful moments of affection. But also there's a lot of news going on in there, because there's a lot of stuff going on in the world.
Absolutely. And they both are committed women, very engaged with political issues and with the world. So they write a lot about that. And Hick's letters, what happened with Hick was that she was a very successful journalist at AP. But as she got closer and closer to Eleanor, it became more and more difficult for her to do her job because she knew too much. She knew too many secrets. And the Roosevelt family had a lot of secrets, starting with FDR's paralysis, which people didn't even know about. But so it was just too hard, and her bosses pressured her more and more to tell stories that she didn't want to tell because of her loyalty to Eleanor. So she left the AP. It was hard for her, and maybe it was probably in some ways a mistake. Yeah. But then she got a job working for the Roosevelt administration, going around the country and writing very, very vividly about conditions of poverty all around the country. And some have said that her writing in both her letters to Eleanor and in her reports to Hopkins are some of the best and most vivid writing about the Great Depression. So the letters are all full of the politics and also what Hick is seeing on the ground. And Eleanor back in Washington is reacting and talking to Franklin about what he needs to do about this and that problem that she's heard about from Hick. So they were right in the middle of things.
Susan Quinn is with us. Her book is called Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. We'll take a quick break and come back in just a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about Eleanor Roosevelt's extraordinary relationship with Lorena Hickok. Hickok was a reporter covering the Roosevelt administration, and sometime around 1932, she and Eleanor fell in love. The biographer Susan Quinn has written a book exploring this relationship. She says they were friends, they were confidants, and their partnership influenced history and policy. The book is called Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. And Susan Quinn is joining us from a studio in Boston to talk about it. So I want to back up a bit to when they first sort of connected, when they first kind of met, or at least when they first started to develop a relationship, I guess. And let's talk about this epic campaign trip that FDR takes through 17 states. This is the summer of 1932, I think it was, the Roosevelt Special. And Lorena is one of the reporters who's covering this big campaign trip, I guess.
Right. She was one of the few. She was the only woman, actually, who was on the campaign train for the whole trip.
Yeah.
She, in the beginning, she was reluctant to cover Eleanor because she didn't – because – in the past, first ladies had been pretty much relegated to the women's page, mm-hmm. and she didn't want to get back onto the women's page. But then she began to sense that Eleanor was something more than that was pretty much hooked once she had some intimate time with Eleanor. As she wrote back to her boss at the AP, she's a real person.
Right. The dame has enormous dignity. The dame has enormous dignity. That was
yes.
part of what she said. I love that.
Yeah. Newspaper language.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
So from that moment, so then the editors at AP said, she's all yours, Hickok.
Right.
Have fun.
Right.
So it began with Hickok trailing Eleanor, becoming her shadow and traveling with her everywhere. And that was a challenge in itself because Eleanor is nonstop. Her energy was huge. And she was going all over by train for various talks and to funeral of, you know, Roosevelt's secretary. And, you know, she just was an amazing person to try to keep up with, which Hick discovered pretty quickly. And more and more Hick was falling in love.
Right. Well, it's interesting that Eleanor Roosevelt had this profound aversion to reporters. Everyone in her family did. Her, I think it was her aunt who said, I've never in my life talked to a reporter and I probably never, ever will. And Hick had covered the Roosevelts when he was governor of New York, though she, as you say, Eleanor had kept her distance.
Mm-hmm.
But then something changes. You say Eleanor started to open up to Lorena in some ways because Eleanor has this conversation with her private secretary where Malvina Thompson, Tommy as they called her, who had heard these stories about Hick, and it sort of humanized Hick
yes.
for Eleanor.
Yeah.
Did
mm-hmm.
I get that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, Hick had this surface toughness, which she had to have, you know, to survive in that world. But underneath, a very vulnerable person who empathized tremendously with other people's difficulties because she had had this very difficult childhood. And one night, she talked to Tommy on the train about it. They exchanged stories. And Hick told Tommy that she had lost her mother when she was 12. Her father was physically abusive, beat her with barrel staves, just a really sadistic guy who actually tortured her animals. And finally, at age 13, he remarried, and the new stepmother kicked Lorena out of the house. So she was on her own starting at 13, managing by working as a girl, as it was described, in other people's houses. And going from one to the next, she wasn't very good at working as a girl, it turned out. Very much alone, finding some comfort with, you know, various employers who took her in. Barely getting through high school because she was having to support herself.
Right.
And then finally being rescued ultimately by an aunt in Chicago and going on and finishing high school. Never made it through college and had managed, despite all that, to rise to the top of the AP. So it was a story that touched Eleanor, whose own childhood was very sad and lonely in a different, very different way.
Do you know when it was that Lorena first started to notice Eleanor, you know, beyond being the wife of the governor and then the wife of the president? Because you say in the book, Lorena saw beauty and elegance in Eleanor when most mm-hmm. thought of her as kind of homely and gangly and weird because she wore these sensible shoes and these flowered hats. But Lorena mm-hmm. always seemed to see something else.
Mm-hmm. Well, love can do that.
Right.
And Eleanor had an elegance about her, which I think Hick noticed even when she was the governor's wife, you know, pouring the tea. You know, she had this she had wonderful posture,
right.
you know. And she was especially beautiful when she stood. She was sort of regal, you know. And Hick thought that she was at her best when she was wearing a long gown and standing regally. And for Eleanor to be admired was so important because she'd had this mother who said, who told her that she was an ugly duckling and that she would never make it in society. And her mother had been this beautiful woman. So she always felt inadequate about her looks. And she was not conventionally beautiful. You know, she had this protruding teeth, which was the Teddy Roosevelt teeth,
right.
and this receding chin, and but Hick saw her differently, and that was an important part of what happened.
Hick was a large woman, kind of stocky, mm-hmm. but she had beautiful skin, you say, and shapely legs. Mm-hmm. You say that a few times
mm-hmm.
in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think. People have been too sort of negative about her looks. I actually think she was kind of attractive in a way, but she was negative about her looks, of course, and always felt that she was heavy and clunky and not beautiful. So both ways, I think the appreciation went both ways.
Yeah. Lorena smoked a lot. She cursed a lot. She played poker. couldn't keep her emotions in check like Eleanor did.
Exactly.
It was interesting, too. There's these stories that come later when Lorena loved to just throw herself into an opera that they were watching and be completely consumed by it or, you know, root for the baseball team. She would be completely emotional about those kind of things. And there was always a more kind of distance with Eleanor. So they were different.
I think that was part of the attraction.
Yeah.
You know, Eleanor always had to keep her emotions in check, you know, that she was raised to be, you know, like that. And so she was very constrained and contained. And Hick was always exploding about mm-hmm. this thing or that. So for Eleanor, it was a relief to be with someone like that. And she actually, you know, she said in her letters to Hick, she said, "I blow off to you, but never to F." That's Franklin,
right.
you know, and Hick. And she and sometimes Eleanor got so angry in the letters Hick worried. Hick said at one point, "You know, I know that you know your marriage is difficult, but FDR is a very great man and doing an important job. You know, and you need to stay with him." Hick actually thought Eleanor was. Eleanor talked about leaving, but you know she wasn't going to. There's no way she could. But she definitely blew off to Hick in a way she didn't with anyone else, and that escape valve was very important.
I want to have you read a section from the book, because one of the things you write about is that the connection that they had was from their childhoods, both of which you describe as lonely and loveless. And so in many ways, mm-hmm. what they were is they were, at least for that time, both women who were in need of someone to kind of love them. And so I want you to maybe talk about this section and read this part where Eleanor saw, as you say in the book, Hick as this person who could fulfill her longing for affection and for understanding. But I think this is a really nice moment. Would you talk mm-hmm. about this moment? Just read mm-hmm. this section, if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah, this is 1932, and it's the eve of the great election victory that FDR scored in 1932 right. over Herbert Hoover. And so this is an evening where everyone is dressed up. And this is a point at which Lorena sees Eleanor in this admiring light. Lorena Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt had grown up believing they were homely women, admiring inordinately the beauty and glamour of others. Lorena, at 15, was enchanted by the daughter of the local hotel owner in Aberdeen, South Dakota. She had beautiful dresses with hair ribbons to match, and she was the first person ever to become an inmate of my imagination. The first sentence of Eleanor's memoir of her childhood describes her mother as one of the most beautiful women I have ever seen. Eleanor considered it a great privilege to spend time in her mother's bedroom, watching her prepare for a triumphant evening out in New York society. Quote, "Attention and admiration were the things through all my childhood which I wanted," Eleanor wrote, "because I was made to feel so conscious of the fact that nothing about me would attract attention or would bring me admiration." On this night, in Lorena Hickok's eyes, Eleanor became one of the beautiful ones, the object of the attention and admiration she had longed for. It was the first time Hick had seen Eleanor in evening clothes, and she was stunned by the change in her appearance. She stood beautifully tall, slender and erect in a long white gown, made of some soft material like chiffon, with a short train. Hick thought Eleanor looked like a queen. Later that night, the Roosevelt contingent moved on to the Hotel Biltmore to wait for the election results. Special telephone and telegraph wires had been installed to bring the latest news to the Roosevelt suite. The grand ballroom on another floor was overflowing with supporters watching a big board flash the returns as they came in. As the night wore on and victory seemed assured, the excitement built. The corridors were filled with celebrants shouting and congratulating one another. A great clamor arose for Eleanor to give a press conference, and she reluctantly agreed, only to be barraged with too many questions. Through it all, Hick remembered, she kept smiling, but once she looked directly at me. She shook her head ever so slightly with the expression in her eyes that was miserable. "I was reminded of a fox," Hick wrote, "surrounded by a pack of baying hounds."
That's Susan Quinn reading from her book, Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. We'll take another quick break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to the biographer Susan Quinn. We're talking about her new book, Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. She's joining us from a studio in Boston. Both shared secrets. Eleanor Roosevelt's secret that she shared with Hick was that she was in an unhappy marriage. She didn't want to be first lady. She wanted the independence that she had first started to feel. Now, of course, Hicks' secret was that she was gay. And she revealed to Eleanor that she had a past love life, a woman named Ella Morse, Ellie, as she knew her. Would you talk a little bit about this relationship? Because it seems really kind of heartbreaking. I mean, they had this plan to be together and it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think in some ways maybe it was because of the times
sure.
and expectations because they were together in Minneapolis when Hick was working as a reporter at the Minneapolis Tribune. That's where she got her start. It was really home for her. Mm-hmm. And she had this relationship, years-long relationship with this Ellie, who was heir to a flower fortune in Minneapolis. And they lived together in a nice hotel and they had what seemed like a perfectly blissful time together. And then decided finally to go out to California. Hick thought maybe she wanted to become a novelist, every journalist's dream, you know. And so they went out west, and Ellie met a childhood friend, a man, and decided to fulfill her lifetime dream of getting married. And getting married, of course, was what was expected. Turned out that marriage didn't work out so well, but she left Hick. And Hick was devastated, heartbroken, and really lost for a while.
Yeah.
Kind of tried different things, wound up back in New York. So it ended sadly, although I think it was an important relationship. And Hick and Eleanor were alike in that they never, ever stopped being connected to the people that they'd known and loved, so that she continued all her life to be connected to Ellie and to write her several times a week even.
Yeah.
Eleanor met Ellie at mm-hmm. one point.
Yeah.
So she was still in her life, but that relationship was over, and that was a tremendously difficult time in Hick's life.
It seems like that tragedy, or devastation anyway, made her kind of channel her energy into journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And she just say something about how good Lorena was as a reporter. I mean, she covered the Lindbergh kidnapping, national politics. She was really good, it seems.
She was really good. She was a very vivid writer. She could get people to talk to her. And she had a knack for finding these real poignant stories. When she was at the Tribune, she wrote these stories. For instance, she did one about midgets and how they felt about being condescended to and talked to in baby talk. Hick identified with outsiders, you know, with every kind of freak. So, you know, a story about midgets, another one about an organ grinder whose monkey was stolen. She wrote a story, very touching story, about a man who couldn't find work and who kind of crawled under a bridge to die. You know, and she wrote about, very poignantly, about these girls from the country, from the farm, who'd come into Minneapolis, the big city, you know, and get corrupted or wind up having to, work as prostitutes. Those were her kind of stories, and she was very good at them. And she also wrote – she was very smart about complicated political and corruption stories that came to her. So she was a really good, vivid writer and continued to be even after she worked for the Roosevelt administration.
Right. It's interesting. I don't know what you make of the kind of, I don't even know how to put this, like the journalistic ethics that she was confronted with. Look, she was a reporter covering the Roosevelt administration, and then she becomes, she falls in love with Eleanor, and then she sees these things. As you say, there were a lot of secrets with the Roosevelts. I mean, there was this Earl Miller, you mentioned, this former bodyguard, mm-hmm. and there were rumors, as you said, that they were lovers. And Eleanor gets tied up in the divorce proceedings of Earl Miller and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
But Lorena knows about this, but she keeps her mouth shut.
Yes.
She saw a lot of things that she kept to herself. So what did you make about that kind of... if there was an ethical conflict there at all, because you say at some point, you say the stories that Lorena was writing weren't untruthful, merely selective.
Yes. And of course, all the reporters were doing that. They weren't writing about, for instance, the first time Hick kind of really connected with Eleanor was when the family went off on a barbecue. And at that particular event, she discovered that daughter Anna, that Roosevelt's oldest daughter, was in the midst of a messy divorce. Mm-hmm. Well, none of the reporters were writing about that. And even when Hick found that out, she didn't tell the other reporters about it, and then later the scandal sheets picked it up. Another example, Eleanor's brother, Hall, was an alcoholic who drank himself to death during the years in the White House. And none of that was, nowadays all of that would be daily grist for, every medium. So she had all these secrets and, something that hurt her as a writer even more, I think, was she was so deeply involved with Eleanor and so loyal that the kind of objectivity she would have needed to write, for instance, a biography of Eleanor just became impossible. Even after she left AP, and that was the end of those kind of ethical issues, there was then the ethical – or not even ethical, but emotional issue about whether she could write honestly about Eleanor Roosevelt, whom she adored. And the truth was she couldn't tell the whole story of Eleanor.
What do you think this did to her sort of professional status or professional reputation? I mean, she had achieved this really high status as a journalist. And now, as you say, that was in jeopardy. I guess, though, she realized it was worth it because she saw her old life as this objective journalist as kind of over, I suppose, at least then. Yeah.
She always said that she never, ever regretted leaving. She never regretted making the choice that she made. But professionally, it was pretty much devastating. For a while, she had this job which she liked, reporting to the Roosevelt administration. But then when that ended, it was pretty much impossible for her to go back to journalism. She could have maybe gone abroad and been a war reporter. I think she would have been very good at that. But Eleanor really didn't want her to do that and to risk her life and to be so far away. And what Eleanor wanted mattered more than anything else to her. But professionally, things went kind of downhill and she wound up finding a way, finally, at the end, to write books for young adults, including one about Helen Keller, which was very successful. But that was after really hitting rock bottom.
That's a nice moment in the story, I have to say, because I did feel for that she had, in some ways, it was a kind of unrequited love. I mean, she conceded that Eleanor Roosevelt was not going to be hers alone. Mm-hmm. And she had jeopardized this really great career. I mean, who knows? She was a woman of the time, so that may have been difficult. But who knows how great she could have been as a journalist. She gives all this up. And it's nice to know, as you say, that in these sort of books that she wrote for young adults, that they did pretty well. She ended up okay.
Yeah, at the very end, having struggled and having kind of been rescued from the rock bottom by Eleanor, who Eleanor never ever lost touch with Hick. It was always there for her in that way. And then she came at the end of her life. She came to Hyde Park. Eleanor sent her driver to bring her to Hyde Park from her little cottage on Long Island, where she was all alone and apparently not even able to pay for the coal to keep warm.
Yeah.
So Eleanor brought her to Hyde Park, and she struggled for a while. But eventually these young adult books, certainly not probably what she would have wanted at the height of her career to be doing, but these young adult books did pretty well, especially this one, and brought her enough in royalties so she could be independent at the end. And she felt very good about that.
Talk about – this is another important theme in the book, the effect of their relationship on real policy, on the New Deal in particular. And you refer to their relationship, Hick and Eleanor, as this partnership. They were a team. And you say they were both really passionate about making a difference in people's lives. And this is, you say, when they were the most happy, when they were part of this shared enterprise. And so this kind of engagement, as you sort of referred to earlier, really did have an effect on some of the policies that FDR put into place.
Absolutely. Lorena's reports came back to Eleanor, and Eleanor, when she would read them very carefully and read the letters very carefully, and then she would selectively pass them on and put them in FDR's inbox, and not just put them there, but also nudge him about it, which was Eleanor's style. You know, she kept after FDR to address these moral issues, you know, and not just the political issues. She was really the moral compass in his policy, and really important that way. And then FDR read the reports, and it was said that he would come up with these anecdotes about West Virginia coal miners, you know, or children with blue feet, and you know, because they didn't have shoes in West Virginia in the coal communities, and people would be astounded because FDR was really unable to travel, and wonder where these came from, and a lot of them came from Hick.
Yeah.
They went to Puerto Rico together, mm-hmm. and out of that trip came some real big changes in policy toward Puerto Rico, changes for the better. So they were important.
It's interesting. I wanted to ask you about the Eleanor's friends, Nancy Cook and Marion Dickerman. And they were a couple. They were this gay couple, and they were close friends to Eleanor. You say Hick must have been intrigued by Eleanor and her friends early on. What did she know about the nature of that relationship, and what does it tell you that Eleanor often had friends who had these gay relationships?
Well, it came out of really the fact that these were the women who were involved in politics, especially in New York Democratic politics. And so this couple, Nancy and Marion, you know, Nancy was the head of the Women's Democratic Party in New York, and Marion, they were both involved in politics. Marion ran for state office at one point. They had been involved in suffrage. And they were just one of a number of these couples. And I am absolutely sure that Hick immediately recognized that this was a lesbian couple. And Eleanor was deeply involved with Nancy and Marion. They traveled together, mm-hmm. yet another triangle.
Right.
And in the end, it ended badly, very badly. And I write about that in the book. They became very possessive of Eleanor, and then there were arguments in which they said things which hurt her deeply, and they pretty much ended the relationship at that point. But they had been involved in this Valkill Industries, which was this cottage industry that they did together, and they hired craftsmen to create furniture, and they sold it. That was something that Eleanor did with these two women as a team. And they had gone camping together, the three of them. So it had been a deep, important relationship, and it ended. I was not able to understand entirely why. Partly their possessiveness. Partly they said things that hurtful things to Eleanor about how she needed them more than they needed her. She hated that. She always had to be the one who was helping, not the one who was being helped. The one friendship relationship of all of the many she had, which ended that way.
I want to ask you about when was it that Hick realized this was not going to be a sort of a lifelong relationship? When did this start to occur to her? Because you say even if Eleanor had dared at the time to leave Franklin or to live openly with another woman, mm-hmm. you say that Eleanor was just not able or willing to devote herself to just one person. When does this awareness come to Hick, do you think?
Well, I think that there are these letters. Hick was very jealous and possessive.
Yeah.
And so there would be these stormy times when Eleanor was being pulled in different directions, you know, towards her children or towards others, many, many people who wanted Eleanor's time and affection and attention. And Hick had a very low tolerance for that. And that became more and more unbearable to Eleanor. And there was there's a letter Eleanor wrote where she says, you know, I love different people in different ways, and I love you I love you, but I love many others, and I would not be unhappy. It would make me happy if you found someone else to love. Okay. I wouldn't be jealous because I love you so much, and I wouldn't be jealous. Well, you know, I think Hick at that point, I think the alarm bells went off, you know, that Eleanor was saying, you need to find a way to control your neediness and possessiveness and get it. And at that point, Hick actually went off on one of her reporting journeys for the New Deal and stayed away for several months and came back. By the time she came back, Eleanor was feeling really hurt that she'd been away so long. And Hick had somehow kind of managed to tone down or get her neediness under control. Mm-hmm. And after that, they were able to be together and to go to the theater and to see each other and so on without Hick's being so possessive. And I think Hick knew that she wanted Eleanor in her life forever. And she realized that there was a good possibility that if she didn't get her needs under control, that might not happen.
Less than a minute left. I want to ask you, do you think Hick was happy in the end of her life?
I think she had happy moments. One of them was just before Eleanor died, when Eleanor came to her little apartment in Hyde Park and they sat together outside and talked for a long time. I think the moments when she was with Eleanor, she was happy. She could get pleasure out of a lot of things. For instance, she loved, you know, the Brooklyn Dodgers and was a passionate fan. You know, she had little boys in her neighborhood who did all kinds of dog walking and things for her. And she really enjoyed those things. So I think she was reasonably happy at the end.
Susan Quinn. Her book is Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. She joined us from a studio in Boston. Susan Quinn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, and we need to say a very special thank you today to our volunteer, Susan Anderson, who has just completed a big project. This was a multi-year project to digitize the Radio West archive. I can't imagine it was much fun, but she did it with a lot of skill, and we really appreciate all of the help. So, Susan, thank you very much. We'll hope to find something else for you to do and come back and see us. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.